Good afternoon. This is Dick Van Dyke welcoming you to our little flair for all. Lots of things doing on today's show. And as a for instance, Ray Falk will have words from Tokyo and from Canada. We couldn't get Lester Pearson and John Diefenbaker, so we had to settle for Larry and Gary.
From the frozen wilds of the barren north comes that bold Canadian pair. Just a jump ahead of the Mounties are Larry and Gary for flair.
This is Larry and Gary for Flair.
What is bravery? Where does it come from? What acts of valor spring from the common man? Major Thurston Worcester in civilian life, a Latin teacher. Then, when his country calls, a man of strength and courage.
Come in, Major. Come in.
Yes, sir.
At ease, Major. Smoke?
Thank you, sir.
Drink?
Thank you, sir.
Candy?
Thank you, sir.
Pillow. Slipper.
You're too kind, General Zerzak.
Now, Worcester, as you know, our position is precarious. The enemy has us pinned down because of an observation post on that high cliff up there.
Yes, sir, Hill 5.
As you know, the post is surrounded by landmines, machine gun nests, and tanks.
And a very big dog, sir.
Now, Major, we could wait for help, but our entire battle line depends on our ability to neutralize that enemy lookout.
Yes, of course, sir.
Major, we have captured an enemy spy.
Good.
I have his special secret pass right here. He is your size, so his clothes will fit you.
Good.
Major, if you can pose as that spy, you can return to the enemy lines and destroy the post.
Yes, sir.
Major Worcester, if you are caught, you will be executed.
Yes, sir.
Major, I can't command you to do this dangerous task. I can't ask you to risk certain death. What do you say, Major?
No.
No?
No, no, I wouldn't do that.
Oh.
No, I get somebody else for that.
Well, I thought perhaps you...
No, no, I wouldn't do it. No.
Oh.
No.
Thank you. Now, for those of you who have waistline measurements that have nowhere to go but down, here's physical fitness expert Bonnie Pruden.
If your shoulders are round and your chins are double, your legs are bowed and your figure's in trouble, knock-kneed, pigeon-toed,
or just plain stout,
Bonnie Pruden can straighten you out.
This week, we talk about exercise machines and what they don't do. You know, in every one of my audiences, someone sooner or later gets up and says, Miss Pruden, I've just bought a such-and-such a machine for $285 or $365, and how good is it? Boy, am I in a spot, because most of the time you have to say, you got rooked. Somebody's just making some money. And then, of course, there are the people who buy machines that might do them some good, and they use them maybe twice, and then they put them under the bed or in the closet. And then there are the people who show everybody that they've bought a machine, and then there's the person who expects the machine to do everything. Most of the time, the machine is only as good as you are, and since you just lie there, you aren't very good. Far more than machines, any day in the week, I would rather see you do exercise on your own. But in case, there's the pounding machine. Now, you know, when you get a tough steak, you take it down to the butcher, and you say, now, this got to be tenderized, so he takes out a flat hammer, and he hammers away at that, and he tenderizes it all right. He breaks up all those little fibers, and the whole thing gets nice and soggy. Well, if you beat yourself crawling, either bouncing on the floor or bouncing on a machine, that's what happens to your flesh. It gets soggy. Period.
McGuire sisters sing, It May Sound Silly.
Ah, day we quarreled and you left me before you walked out through the door. I wanted to tell you how much I would miss you, but my pride wouldn't let me tell you so. It may sound silly, but if you phone me and ask forgiveness for doing me wrong, it may sound silly, but I'd be waiting with open.
In Tokyo, a child's best friend is a cop. Reporter Ray Falk will tell you why as soon as he pays his fine for walking through a game of hopscotch.
Ray Falk is reporting and a coming in clear. From the South Pacific to the China Sea and all around the Eastern Hemisphere.
A child's best friend is a cop. When Japan's police talk about puppets, they're not referring to stool pigeons. The men in blue put on their puppet theater to the delight of young Japanese children, and in an effort to reduce juvenile delinquency. Just what kind of Japan's 6 and 7 year old children have been committing is not quite clear. But under thick headlines, crime fighting made simple, Japan's newspapers have been presenting full page layouts of the amateur actors, professional cops, in action. Considering Japan's recent unsolved crime rate, the police's general lackadaisical attitude, and so on, one commentator here wondered whether the caption should not have referred to professional actors and amateur cops. As another man put it, if they can't protect us, at least they might as well amuse us. And entertaining they certainly are as they travel around the countryside north of Tokyo presenting Japanese fairy tales in puppet plays. The Honorable Sergeant Fridays make the dolls out of waste paper. They rehearse the plays with the aid of a tape recorder. Much to the troops' regret, their constant cast changes as the coppers are assigned to new beats. One little girl summed up Japan's PAL when she said, giggling the other afternoon, "That man holding the badger, he looks like a badger himself." Ray Falk, ABC, Tokyo.
Stunning reports that come out of the Department of Agriculture in recent days was the gnawing news that more and more pigs are being born that bite other pigs' tails. Therefore, as first in a series of flair seminars of the major problems of our times, we have invited Professor Hogworth Baconstrip to wallow in this subject. Professor Baconstrip.
Oh, yes, thank you. Now, the problem as I see it is that the porkers are nibbling on the wrong thing.
Not only are they ruining their image as the number one garbage consumer, but they are cramping the style, namely the tail, of the other pigs. Pigtails have always been a problem, of course, but before this, only because the little boys pulled them in classrooms. Now, of course, by gosh, it's gotten out of hand. Into the mouth, you might almost say. Some experts have claimed that the curly-tailed critters are doing it only to get some attention. We all know they're hams anyway. The whole question reached its present proportions when a prize pig was attacked from the rear by some swine. He bit at the champ, you might almost say. No, that's very clever. Bit at the champ. Champ at the bit. Oh, my. And so I say we will fight this thing in the pokes, in the pens, and in the mud hollows. Right to the bitter end. After all, I don't mind a chomp or two, but we can't let them make pigs of themselves, can we? Sinatra sings, "I only have eyes for you." Well, you must be a gasser. Either that or you look like a cross between Ava Gardner and Juliet Prowse.
Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright. 'Cause I only have eyes for you, dear. And the moon may be high, but I can't see a thing in the sky, 'cause I only have eyes for you. I don't know if we're in a garden or on a crowded avenue. Maybe millions of people go by, but they all disappear from view, and I only have eyes for you. Maybe millions of people go by, but they all disappear from view, and I only have eyes for you.
Alan Prescott has some life-saving hints for macaroni, peaches, and fillets. Don't tell me Caroline's gotten two more ponies.
Oh, please, Alan Prescott, oh, what'll I do? My house is all problems just waiting for you. From a squeaky door to a broken shelf, won't you help me now? To help myself.
Hello, girls, this is Alan Prescott, the life-saver for Flair. It's none of my business what you're saving your time for, but I'll do what I can to help you save it. There comes a time when you want to have macaroni au gratin. Well, you probably have your own plans for that, but I would like to offer the fact the old-fashioned spice, mace, used sparingly, does more than we have any right to expect for this dish. when the season comes again, if it ever does, so that you can pick fresh mint in your garden, chop a few leaves and mix it in your sour cream. This is excellent served on sugared, fresh peaches or raspberries. There's nothing like a surprise at the end of a meal, even if it's only the announcement that you're leaving home. When you have fish fillets the next time, any kind of fish fillets, see if they don't get better reception if you do this. To a generous amount of butter or margarine, add chopped pimento and serve it on the fillets. I don't know why we have so much trouble about coaxing people to eat fish, but there's a large anti-fish lobby that has to be overcome with tricks and sauces. Thought for the I'll be a few minutes late school. When you're late, you're really stealing. You're stealing time from someone that can never be replaced. That ought to start you on your way.
Thanks, Ellen. Tape may soon replace stitches in the future, reports Lawrence Galton. That means comedians will soon leave you in tapes.
Here's Lawrence Galton to let us in on what is doing and brewing in medicine.
If you've ever had to go through the business of having a needle-and-thread medical sewing job done after an accidental cut or operation, you probably haven't enjoyed the stitching to begin with, nor the prospect of unstitching to end with, and all the less if you've had to shepherd a frightened youngster to the process. Now, finally, it looks like stitches are going to be out in a great many instances. Over the past 3 years, a new kind of surgical tape has been studied in more than 6,000 patients. Taking the place of stitches, it holds an accidental cut or a surgical incision, neatly closed until healed, sticking even when wet, and has microscopic openings to allow air to get in and speed healing. At one Chicago hospital, the tape has been effective in over 1,000 cases of accidental injuries. Elsewhere, it has been used in minor surgery and even after major operations. There's no pain when it's applied, and it strips off later without discomfort, which makes it appealing to virtually all youngsters and quite a few adults who regard the approach of a doctor with needle and thread as something to be viewed not calmly. And there's more to the story, too. The tape avoids the irritation that stitches sometimes produce and also the little crosshatch scar marks they may leave behind. Altogether, it looks like a happy practical advance.
This is Tom Wire in Venice for Flair. We were sitting in Harry's bar one night where tourists are rare in winter. Venice is more real than any other place on earth, the man said. People look at the sky here, and streets are for walking or talking. The voices of men and pigeons are the only noise, except for the water lapping against our houses. The man was about 40, brisk and professional looking. His name is Norman Sherman. No, not an American or English expatriate poet, a Russian. An Italian-born Russian who runs the biggest medical laboratory in Venice and claims to be one of 27 men in all Italy who speak Italian as it should be spoken. Venice is full of people whose personality and background are as paradoxical as his. Take Tortorella, the concierge at the Bauer Grunewald Hotel. He looks like Yul Brynner, directs his staff as if they were Taras Bulba's hordes, and writes popular songs. Not only writes them, but gets them recorded and performed at major pop festivals in Italy. Of course, his text writers help. One of them is the French poet, playwright, and academician Jean Cocteau. Tortorella got friendly with the French immortal by making sure that the same gondolier, Mario, drew up at the Bauer Grunewald's door each day on the dot of 10. And have you ever asked a Venetian policeman for directions other than from San Marco to the Rialto? If you're a woman and good-looking, the obliging policeman will stick his nightstick in his pocket and take you where you want to go. If you're a man, you'll get a lot of talk, which, once you've untangled the Italian, will mean it's that-a-way. Tom Wire, ABC, Venice.
Thanks, Tom. Today, Flair's wandering minstrel, Oscar Brand, tells you where the folk song Dark as a Dungeon came from. Was that the great power failure of 1624?
Oh, come all ye lovers of lore and legend, come from near and far, for a song and a story on Americana by Oscar Brand and his guitar.
Hello, this is Oscar Brand for Flair. You know, sometimes it's very difficult to discover whether the version of a song you know came before the version of the song that somebody else sings. For instance, Merle Travis's Dark as a Dungeon.
For it's dark as a dungeon and damp as the dew, where the dangers are double and the pleasures are few, where the rain never falls and the sun never shines. Why, it's dark as a dungeon way down in the mine.
Now, that was one of the songs that Merle had on his album, Folk Songs from the Hills. And everybody thought that Merle had written it based on some older song, possibly. It says, no, no, that's a Welsh coal miner's song, and the verses are about a pit pony.
There's no one works harder, there's no one so strong than the little pony that runs. The little pit pony that moves down the line, carrying our coal through the dark, dreary mine.
Well, which Dark as a Dungeon came first? The Kentucky Hill version or the Welsh coal miners version? I guess it doesn't make too much difference. They're both lots of fun to sing. This is Oscar Brand for Flair.
If you've been debating whether to send your young son to camp, here's Dr. Rose Franzblau to give advice to another listener who's written in with the same problem.
Calling Dr. Franzblau. Dr. Franzblau, please.
To start applying her psychology to problems that are often very trying.
This is Dr. Rose Franzblau speaking for Flair. At this time of the year, the following question comes in very frequently.
Should I send my son, 7 and a half, to summer camp this season? He changes his mind back and forth every few weeks. After every big drum-beating session at which he goes along seemingly enthusiastically, I find him crying in his room at bedtime and saying he doesn't want to go. We have never had a vacation alone since he was born and have been really looking forward to it. What shall we do?
Children like to go away and leave their parents. They don't like the feeling of being sent away. The back-and-forth wavering which your son is going through is not unusual. For some children, it is a kind of preparation for the pain of parting. In others, it shows a lack of readiness for the separation from the parents. However, discuss it with your son. Let him participate in the decision. You may find that he is willing to go away once he has shown this respect. However, if he... Don't push him or pressure him. Let him go to day camp this summer, and then next summer, he will, in all probability, be ready to separate from his parents.
Thanks, Dr. Franzblau. Dick Van Dyke again. Are you like the woman who weighed herself and looked so worried her husband asked her what was wrong? You overweight, he said, and she said, no, but according to this chart, I ought to be taller. Well, if you've got a weight problem or a waistline problem, you've got plenty of company. The trouble is, too many of our young children aren't in the physical condition they ought to be in either. And that's important, because youngsters in the growing years should be able to count on physical fitness. That's why the President's Council on Physical Fitness has developed a basic program of physical education that's fun for the youngsters as well as being good for them. Why not take it up at your next PTA meeting in terms of the next semester at your particular school? And also get free information by writing the President's Council on Physical Fitness, Washington 25, D.C. That's the President's Council on Physical Fitness, Washington 25, D.C.
Flair's off
and running, if you please. To fill you in on fads and fancies from overseas.
This is Charles P. Arno in East Africa, where there's a tropical downpour almost every day, but that background noise you hear is the water running into my bathtub. You see, I'm conducting a vital scientific experiment. There's been a hot international dispute lately over this business of how bath water gurgles down the drain. It all began when a learned British scientist claimed he'd found that bath water in the northern hemisphere runs out counterclockwise, or if you will, from right to left, while in the southern hemisphere, it runs out clockwise or in circles from left to right. A lot of bathroom veterans insist there's absolutely no difference in the swirl, whether north of the equator or south of it. Now that you have all that important background, let's see how our own experiment's getting on. Yes, that should be about enough water. And remember, I'm south of the equator, so if that original Englishman was right, this water should swirl out clockwise. Yeah, it's swirling from left to right, but wait a minute, it's making a left turn, the last of it's gurgling out counterclockwise. Well, if you'll forgive an old bathwater watcher, I guess that puts everybody's theories right down the drain. Charles B. Arno, ABC Flair in East Africa.
You've been listening to Flair, a worldwide presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.